Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or just try and make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I talk to Mark Paralivas, the president of the Electoral District Association of the People's Party of Canada, the upstart new right-wing political party led by Maxime Bernier. There's been a lot of discussion about the People's Party, what it stands for, and what people are concerned that it stands for. But if all politics are local, then perhaps a local organizer for the People's Party should tell us what he thinks it stands for. I don't know if that's what this podcast will accomplish, but if nothing else, it will give us a place to start. Talking to the people of the People's Party is the topic of this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. Now, everything I know about Maxime Bernier, I read and saw and heard on the news. I also know that Bernier has generated a passionate fan base amongst many Canadians, including the so-called Bernie Bros, who were sitting front and center at one of the Conservative leadership debates that I attended in person in Toronto. It should also not be underestimated that in just 6 months, the People's Party of Canada has established EDAs in all 338 federal ridings and have fronted candidates in each of the three recently concluded by-elections and even garnered 10.6% of the vote in the Burnaby South by-election, which was won by Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP. So no matter how you feel about the People's Party, you have to at least respect how quickly it seems to have become a political force in Canada. Now, personally, I have my own concerns about the People's Party. I have concerns about terms like extreme multiculturalism. I have concerns about Bernier and the PPC using red pill memes, which are so heavily and negatively associated with misogynistic and incel movements, especially when Bernier was called out for their use back during the Conservative leadership race. I'm also concerned about Bernier's association with Rebel Media, which recently rehired Gavin McInnes of Proud Boys fame, not to mention the fact that he has the support of Faith Goldie, a well-known white supremacist and neo-Nazi. Now, that's obviously not to say that everyone who takes part in the People's Party is an extremist or a neo-Nazi, but as I said, everything I know about Bernier and the People's Party is from what I've read and heard. I wanted to pick the brains of someone that proudly wears the flag of the People's Party. What's going on in politics that's attracting them to this new party? What are they looking for in terms of political leadership and solutions to the pressing issues facing Canada? This week on the Guelph Politicast, Mark Paralivas was gracious enough to accept my invitation to try and answer my questions. Now, I can't say that this podcast is what I envisioned when I started talking to Paralivas and the members of the Guelph EDA, but I did enjoy our talk just the same. This might shock you, but there's this perception out there that I'm kind of a left-wing loony. But I still say there is value to talking to people that challenge our preconceived notions. And like that Eminem song says, this is what happens when a volcano meets a tornado, except, you know, in a friendlier way. So I caught up with Mark Paralivas a few weeks ago in studio. Mark Paralivas, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I guess to begin with, people have probably heard the name People's Party of Canada, but you know they probably recognize the party leader Maxime Bernier, or at the very least heard the name. So I wanted to start just by having you explain what the People's Party is, what it's about, and well, let's just start there.
Right.
What is the People's Party and what are you about?
Fair enough. That's a very big question. I think our leader, Maxime Bernier, is probably one of the best sources to find out the full what is the People's Party all about. And he's the leader, the driving force. But freedom, personal respect, responsibility, fairness, these are the core tenets of the People's Party. And I was sick and tired of hearing platitudes from our federal leaders. I was sick and tired of having the conversation limited to a very narrow band. And Mr. Bernier started tweeting in August and creating controversy at that time. And I was paying attention and I was excited about the things he was tweeting about. And he got in a lot of trouble and there was the CPC convention. And so there's the split there. So what Mr. Bernier represents is a conservative party with real conservative ideals. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of similarities between the CPC and the LPC, the Conservative Party of Canada, and the Liberal Party of Canada. Mm-hmm. And Maxime Bernier calls that out. So it is an alternative for people who are conservative-leaning, right-leaning, and who are sick and tired of politics done the way the CPC and the LPC have done it traditionally, which is all I've experienced right. growing up and living in Guelph, right? The traditional politics of the big newspapers and the conversation being limited to a small, you know, how many more policies can we get? How many more... Anyway,
right.
No, getting into the difference between left and right, right? Like the bureaucracy of it and the...
Sure. I think in terms of what you're saying there is that... And I you could read it a couple of ways. Number one is that the Conservative Party is not conservative enough, or that there's a different branch of conservatism that perhaps the Conservative Party doesn't represent in the same way that, you know, the NDP represents a certain brand of progressivism that maybe the Liberal Party doesn't represent.
Fair enough. I would say, see, here's the thing. I would say that the Liberals have been occupying the NDP's territory, both in provincially and in federally, for a while, for the last 5 years anyway, 4 years since Trudeau took over in federal politics, and Wynne has been steadily marching to the left with yeah. the Liberal Party in sure. Ontario. And so the backlash against that in Ontario has been pretty obvious. Like, we've got a Ford majority. And
we've noticed.
Yeah, well, and we can agree to disagree. I am not disappointed in Mr. Ford, and it's okay to have ideological and mm-hmm. differences in that, different opinions on how things are going. But I'm glad that the liberal left has gone so far, and now we're seeing mm-hmm. people rejecting that. And they occupy, like, when I say gone so far, I mean the Liberals are occupying almost the same space as the traditional NDP. They've left the mm-hmm. center way behind. And I think the CPC, and Mr. Scheer has said this, they're a progressive centrist party, and they're a centrist party that is open to all sorts of ideas, except for Mr. Bernier's ideas. And Mr. Mm-hmm. Bernier's ideas are the ones that are, in my opinion, resonating on the right. Mm-hmm. They're resonating with me anyway, and I hope that other people have a look at them and look at them critically and balance them against the proposals of the CPC and the LPC, because that's democracy, right? Like, silencing somebody and saying, don't listen to their ideas, that's terrible. Look at them and look at all of the ideas, what's on offer, and say, yeah, that's where my vote falls.
At the same time, though, and maybe this goes into, you know, maybe why people perceive the People's Party as such a threat is that Maxime Bernier was within a couple of guys or a couple of ladies from voting his way to becoming
the leader,
party leader yeah. of the Conservative Party.
Yep, it's a shame they destroyed all those ballots on the evening of that leadership race, isn't
right.
it? No chance for a recount there. Such a shame. Shucks.
You're not projecting a conspiracy.
I'm not projecting anything. It's just a shame in
right.
a transparent democracy that they would find the need to destroy ballots like that
right.
in such a tight leadership race. It just seems I'm not suggesting anything untoward. I'm suggesting that in a transparent democracy like ours, destroying ballots after such a tight leadership race is
right.
maybe a poor decision.
Yeah, fair
yeah.
enough.
Yeah, not so transparent.
Yeah.
regardless of the rest of it.
Right. Yeah. It's that's. I think pro forma, I think anyone who's concerned about democracy, no matter their stripes, want
sure.
better transparency
yeah.
or just some transparency.
I would love for somebody who wins mm-hmm. to be able to put every single ballot on the table and say, let's count together, and have live YouTube cameras and all sorts of... This is the level of transparency that I personally, and I am speaking for the People's Party here,
mm-hmm.
but that's the kind of government that I'm hoping to achieve. And government is difficult. Government is not
sure.
easy. There are complicated levels of bureaucracy. There are complicated levels of decorum. There are complicated levels at every single level of government. And federal is no different from municipal. You know, we can have disagreements about red light cameras. And
mm-hmm.
that's as difficult a conversation to have as immigration at the federal level. And
mm-hmm.
it's as fraught, right? You've got a split council on red light cameras. We've got all sorts of conversations happening about all sorts of very, very difficult files. But
right.
what I would like is to be able to take a postmortem with real data that actually happened on everything from leadership races to China to, you know, how exactly is the AG not being politically interfering in these cases, et cetera. Like recently, right. There was a cabinet shuffle. Mr. Trudeau shuffled one attorney general out and put another one in while maintaining the whole thing is not political. I'd love some transparency. You know, like there's a lot of transparency missing in the current Trudeau government. And the way the CPC has done government previously, the last 10 years, 2008 to 2016, when they had a minority, in, or 2006 to 2016, where they had a minority and then a majority, the transparency was lacking there, which is why Harper lost to Mr. Trudeau. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Can we agree on that? No?
What I will concede is that I have not been well pleased with a lot of Justin Trudeau's decisions.
Disappointment is rampant, I think, on Justin Trudeau's decisions. But yes.
I mean, it's fascinating to me that, and I think, you know, we sort of have turned politics into a team sport kind of feeling, where it's the color, the blazer you wear, the shirt you wear, whose team you're on, and I think one of the fascinating things, at least from my observations, is that a lot of people who've come to the People's Party are, again, it was so close that people were behind Bernier. You know, he could have, in a very similar and not too different universe, have been the leader of the Conservative Party.
Could have, yeah.
But now when I see the tone on, you know, the internet and social media and things, it's like the Conservative Party feels like this. It's a completely different animal.
Than the People's Party?
Then, well, I guess, yeah, from people who are promoting the People's Party. It feels like the Conservative Party is this alien from another world that we have nothing in common with. It's like a silicon-based life form, almost.
I hear what you're saying. And if you walk around Twitter long enough, and there's a lot of PPC, there are a lot of very, very...
Sadly, I walk around Twitter
a lot. Yeah, me too. But you see a lot of very passionate PPC people, and you see a lot of very passionate CPC people. Not so many passionate LPC people. Maybe that's just my Twitter. Who knows, right? But the LPC and the CPC and the PPC have very, very robust conversations, in my opinion. And there are a lot of similarities between the CPC and the PPC, but there are very fundamental splits, because there are a lot of similarities between the CPC and the LPC that aren't shared between the CPC, sorry, LPC and PPC. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get into the acronyms, so I apologize so much if people are getting hard to follow me. I'm saying that there's a lot of overlap between the Conservative Party and the People's Party, and overlap between conservatives and liberals, but not so much overlap between liberals and People's Party. So that's why there's they're all butting up against each other, except People's Party and liberals. And People's Party and Liberal Party is very, very starkly different. Whereas, so an example on immigration, Mr. Scheer has talked about gearing the number of new immigrants coming into Canada. Currently, it's at 310, I believe, moving up to 320 in 2019. I could be 340 in 2019. Mm-hmm. Sorry if I've misspoken there. 340 in 2019. In 2018, it was 310. And Mr. Scheer's proposal is to basically continue the temporary foreign workers and immigration numbers matching those immigrants with job needs. And so he's not giving a firm number, which is problematic for people in the People's Party. And Justin Trudeau is saying... is releasing reports calling for 450,000 immigrants every year. So that's an increase. We've already increased from 2015 level under Stephen Harper from 250,000, which is what Mr. Bernier is proposing we go back to. And we've already increased 40% from that level. And my question with regards to that is, we've brought a whole bunch of people in on our taxpayer dollar. They cost, the latest figure I saw was between, let's say, 6,000. That's the lower figure that I saw. So for each person, for services and like state-run services, et cetera. But my issue isn't necessarily with that. It's, where will these people drive? Like, these people will buy cars. These people will have homes.
Yes.
And we are already facing a housing crisis. We are already facing a situation where people who are our age, people who are 20, so I'm almost 40.
Thank you.
I'm 38. I'm 38. And when I was 20... I bought my first house, and it was hard. And my parents had to help me, but I bought my first house. I could do that on the salary that I was making. That's not possible now, right? So I'm looking at immigration not from an emotions standpoint, but from an economic standpoint. I want people who are 20 years old now, or who are 15, 17, coming up to being independent and out of their parents' house, I want them to look at a housing market that there is a possibility they could actually own something in their life.
Right.
If you're 20 years old coming out right now, you have, let's say, $100,000 debt for schooling. Mm-hmm. You look at a $350,000 condo, mm-hmm. and the taxes and the condo fees and the mortgage and all of the things that go along with that. Forget food, forget putting any furniture in there. You're out. You can't do it. You can maybe rent, mm-hmm. period. And if you save and save and save for 10 years, you maybe pay off
right.
your student loan, and you're still no further ahead to owning a property, which that's terrible. And is it worth trading having a housing crisis now for importing all of these people that we don't, and Mr. Trudeau doesn't have a plan for, right? That is the unfortunate thing. 10 years from now, right, we're going to be having, and I feel like I'm dominating the conversation, but there's so much to get into, right?
Well, let me play Cheer devil's up. Advocate yeah. for a sec. Nothing you said was necessarily untrue, because there are a lot of young people who can't get into the housing market. There are people in the housing market and who can't get out of their starter home, or they can't get out of their rental.
Can't get out of the condo to go into a freehold.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Is that the fault of people immigrating, though?
I'm not blaming the people immigrating. I'm blaming the people who are creating the plan. Hold on.
Okay.
Because the plan is the important thing, right? If you bring in 250,000 people, and those 250,000 people are matched with jobs, those are economic migrants. These are people who have mm-hmm. created a situation that the employer is sponsoring them. They're coming in, and the government of Canada is working with them. Okay. That improves cultural cohesion. It improves the people integrating into Canadian culture better. It improves having a job. Does that? Mr. Bernier has said that many times. It takes pressure off of the state, right? Bringing people mm-hmm. in en masse the way Mr. Trudeau has done this, without a plan for how to integrate these people, without a plan of where they're going to work, without a plan of where they're going to live or what roads they're going to drive on, the 401 is an absolute nightmare, right? Mm-hmm. We haven't fixed that problem. That problem is, and that's not an immigrant's fault. That's not their right. fault. I'm not blaming that group of people. I'm blaming the people planning who okay. are looking at all of these problems, and they say, you know what we need? More people. That's false. It doesn't solve the problem. Having no plan mm-hmm. and bringing people in and saying, we're investing in people, guys. This is what we're doing. This is the plan. We're going to invest in people. No, it's a false
dichotomy.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not it's not one or the other.
Right.
There is no plan for one, and they're selling this false plan to fix. Mm-hmm. So here's the problem. And this is going to be a little bit of a long walk, so...
Okay, all right.
we don't have enough people to continue the tax base, right? Canada
yes.
is an aging society, so
yes.
a lot of the people who are making a lot of the money, who are currently padding the coffers of government through their taxes, are going to be retiring. So
yes.
if you have a $400,000 salary, $200,000, $250,000 salary, 42% of your income goes to the government. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
If that tax base is then replaced by a salary of $50,000, less of that money goes to the government. The government mm-hmm. is struggling to pay its bills, can't pay for the entitlements that have been promised to all the Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
We ran into this problem in the 80s first, because in the 60s, we stopped having babies, right? The birth rate
yes.
bottomed out at about two, between one and two kids per woman. This started happening in the 60s,
yes.
right? And I don't
yes.
want to get into the reasons, but our population started declining. In the 80s, we decided to fix that problem by bringing people in. We can maintain the tax base. We don't have to fix the birth rate problem. That'll be fixed by people coming in. Everybody agreed with that. Mr. Trudeau Sr. brought in the multiculturalism, and Mulroney signed it into law in 1980. I believe it's 1987, but somebody will
right.
tell me I'm wrong. So multiculturalism became the law of the land in 1987. Moving forward, we still didn't fix the baby problem. And we chose to continue importing people. And so now we're at another stop point. We are at
right.
the point where there's a bunch of people who are retiring. The Canadian government sees this. Ahmed Hassan, a couple of weeks ago, was talking about how there are 5 million people retiring. We need all these people to replace the jobs that are going to be going.
Yes.
And so that's the point we find ourselves in. We don't have time to reinvest in Canadian births, because it takes 18 years to grow a Canadian taxpayer. right? And then and then another, right? Whereas you can bring one in a day, a year, right? Welcome to Canada. You're a tax-paying Canadian. That's how they've decided to solve the problem. I want a longer view. This is a very big problem that has been kicked down the road for 40 years, since the 80s, right? And I'm not saying that the People's Party can fix it. I'm saying I recognize this is a problem.
Right.
And the solution is not more people. The solution to the 401 filling with cars is not more people. The solution to Toronto being unaffordable, to rent in Guelph being continuing to tick up while wage stagnation intensifies, and people who are getting gigs and part-time jobs and online jobs.
Yeah.
This is not a problem that's fixing itself by bringing people here. And so I'm not blaming immigrants. That's not who I'm blaming. They're as much a victim as we, as Canadians who are currently here.
Right.
Everybody is being victimized by this.
Right.
And that is the fault of the Trudeau government. That is the fault of these people who say they have a plan and do not have a plan.
Yeah, okay. What I would argue is that, yeah, there was a lot of good hope and goodwill when we brought in a lot of Syrian refugees. And there wasn't necessarily, in terms of hard and fast planning.
No, there was no plan.
No.
And he was told that by multiple premiers. He, being Justin Trudeau, was told that by the premier of Saskatchewan. The premier of Saskatchewan begged, I believe it's Scott Moe, begged multiple times with public letters saying, don't do this. You are putting Canadians in jeopardy. And I can't find this video. If anybody has this video, please send it to me. But Justin Trudeau said, I will take personal responsibility for all of these people. I remember watching. I was like, man, I hope that's on the PVR. It was not on my PVR. But these are things that happen. And unfortunately, the lack of planning by the Trudeau government, the lack of having any idea the reality of the situation he was getting those Syrians in, the Canadian public that he was subjecting this to, all of this was a PR stunt. It was not data-backed, in my opinion.
I will concede there was a PR angle to this, and he's enjoyed the benefits of that.
Sure.
And I would say not just in Canada, but also internationally.
Initially, he did. I think the chickens are coming home to roost this year. I think 2018 was a really tough year for Trudeau and the Liberal brand, despite what the polls say. I think 2018 was an absolute quagmire.
I won't disagree.
And right now, we're seeing even further. The Mark Norman case and today the what's it, Wilson Raybould, former Attorney General.
The SNC-Lavalin.
Those are huge explosions for Liberal, and this is an election year. If that was Paul Martin in the leadership role, he would be gone right now. But they don't have anybody else. That's the interesting thing.
Well, I would also argue that we see that in politics, charisma matters more.
Sure,
and I think that is part of the appeal of Mr. Bernier is that you may not necessarily agree with his politics, but he is undoubtedly charismatic. He's undoubtedly camera friendly.
Sure.
And because I was watching the PPC ad on Twitter earlier today, where he's watching the commentary on the tablet, and he takes off his glasses and said, "Well, that's not, you know, there's a part of that too." So I wouldn't.
Oh, sure, everybody, that's the game, right? That's the game you play, right? If you choose to get into politics, there has to be, you have to connect with people on a certain level, and you have to be able to speak to the camera and smile, the big smile, and not necessarily kiss babies these days, but, you know.
That's, kissing without consent is a little frowned upon.
Yeah, definitely.
To go back to the meat and potatoes of this, though, I hear what you're saying about traffic jams are 401, housing prices are way up.
Look at
the wages aren't meeting the demand. I just hear that, and I think the immigrants, the people sort of orchestrating that have nothing to do with the people who are immigrating. That it's big business.
Sure.
It is even just regular Joes who want to drive their personal automobile down the 401 as opposed to getting on the GO train. The government that won't make it easier to get the GO train.
That's provincial, though.
And that is provincial. I'm just saying there are a lot of different people that share the blame for where our society has logger jammed.
If you have a room that can take 50 people and there are 42 people in there, and there are 42 people in there and everything's comfortable for 42 people, it could probably take 60, but everybody works better at 42, you don't put 59 people in the room, right?
Or right.
Without a plan, right?
Okay.
If you can put you can overstuff the room a certain amount, but when, and let's bring this back to the realities now here, when the hospitals start lining up and people start dying in hallways, you've got a big problem, and that's that's federal and provincial, right? There's a problem with the federal collecting taxes in a provincial jurisdiction. It should be handled by the provinces, not by the feds. And removing a layer of bureaucracy is very expensive, right? Now, on one side of things, I understand bureaucracy is a job, right? But on the other side of things, when you're dealing with opening up, when you're dealing with Canada having a healthcare system the way, and man, we can get into healthcare, we can get into so many things. There's so many interesting things to talk about.
Yes.
But when you're dealing with overloading systems, and when you're dealing with having a finite amount of money, you can't look at that and say, we really wish we could help, right? Like, you can look at your neighbors and say, man, I know they're struggling, and I know we've got an extra couple of hundred bucks, but that couple of hundred bucks is for if things start piling up for us, if we can't pay our rent, if we can't, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when you, Mr. Trudeau has spent $20 billion outside of Canada, the tiny deficits that he was supposed to be running, and then this 2019 is supposed to be balanced, the tiny deficits were supposed to be spent on infrastructure building Canada. The whole 2015 election for Trudeau was he was going to use those deficits to churn our economy and to pick us up a little bit and to build Canada. What has happened? He has not got any major infrastructure projects built. Nothing is really in the ground. And I mean, the Highway 7 bypass has not happened, right? All the work has been pulled out, right?
I would point out that was also a decision
provincial,
at the provincial level.
Provincial, sure, but there's partnerships. And but what I'm saying is, when you overload the systems and tell people everything's going to be great when we you know, realize this plan, and the plan is bring in a bunch of people. And I don't know if you've seen this, the four-step plan, like step one, bring in a bunch of people. Step two, bring in more people. Step three, question mark, question mark, question mark. Step four, profit. Yeah, it's the question mark, question mark, question mark that I have a problem with. How do these people help build Canada? How do these policies, the pipeline policies, the inability to, the LNC pipeline is now in jeopardy because of Bill C-69. How do you say that these policies are the best policies for Canada when that is provably false? You know what I mean? When the news is, the news being CBC, the mainstream media, is branding things one way, right? Like Doug Ford can't do anything right. Trump can't do anything right. Trudeau has rainbows and unicorns and hair and socks, right? It's very, very misleading to look at all of the problems that have been caused by this Trudeau government. And no plan. And that's a big, big problem, right? You can't just stuff a powder keg full and go, we hope it sorts itself out.
I would argue, though, that governments, by their nature, create as many problems as they solve.
I would disagree with that statement. I would disagree with that. I mean, there are examples of that. And sure, you can point to governments have failed many times in history, right?
Sure.
There are many failures in government, sure. But there are successes, too. We had fiscal balance federally through the late 90s, right? Late 90s, 96 to 2006. And then we hit the 2008 crisis. Canada was a very, very solid country all through that time, through solid fiscal management, through being reasonable with our international commitments, through fiscally sound spending and infrastructure spending. And yeah, we had some benefits and entitlements as well. We had, you know, securities and not a welfare state that was completely open borders. We have gone so far off the beaten track of fiscal responsibility and reasonable governance that it is incredible that people aren't more angry than they are.
I have two counterpoints.
Okay.
One is we didn't have a subprime mortgage crisis in this country.
Sure, but that was post 2008.
Well, that was the cause of 2008.
Yeah, but
the crash.
There was
too many junk mortgages.
Yeah, that was not global. That was a Western world banking crisis. That we got caught up in. It wasn't created by Canada, in my opinion. In fact, we were so rock solid. People were looking at us for an example. And then we took all of that great economic bedrock that we had built for years, generations. We had it for 20 years, and you know, one government spent it away.
The second point I would point out is that Between 2008 and 2015, there were deficits every year. And I know you will argue that it's not as big as Trudeau's deficits or, you know, given the circumstances.
Sure.
But I would also make the argument that the balancing of the budget was done with some fairly
Oh, there's a reason. There's a reason the CPC Harper government lost
in
2015, in my opinion. There are people, there is a huge mushy center. So I think, I think 25%, 25% of people are very, very hard-based liberal.
Mm-hmm.
25%, I would say maybe 30. I'd give the conservatives 30.
Yes.
Are hard, it doesn't matter what happens, they're going to vote conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 50, maybe 55%. That's 45% of people who are centrist, who don't feel that there is a party that represents them, that feel like there is more that could be done on the government, by the government for
right.
the people. And the more that I've read about this, the more that I've been involved in this, and I've been watching politics for a long time, but I was a liberal voter. I voted for Justin Trudeau, and more fool me, right? Like, fool me once,
sure.
won't happen again. But I believed that he would get out of the way and let Canada be as great a country as we can be, because we are rich. We have intelligent people. We have, we have resources and things to sell, and we can refine those things.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we instead socializing pipelines, buying pipelines that private companies were willing to put money in and build, until the government came in and said, yeah, okay, before you do that, we need gender intersectionality, whatever, done, study before you can do this. So there, it seems like, purposeful blocks to getting our products, and not just oil, but all products, to the rest of the market. But oil is the biggest one.
Yeah.
So when you take, like, the biggest one for Canada, right? So when you take the biggest product that we sell on the world market and you reduce the price that we can demand for it from $40 a barrel down to 12, are you a friend of Canada, or are you doing something terribly, awfully wrong?
Again, devil's advocate, we had the most pipeline-friendly government possible for 10 years in the federal level, and then also in Alberta.
And we got we got two pipelines built and one on the way, and then Trudeau came in and destroyed it. And Obama held the XL for, 2 years? He held the decision till just before he was out of office?
I let me say, I'm against pipelines.
We can get into that. I would be interested in that. Because currently, the workaround for pipelines is much more dangerous than the pipelines themselves. Like, we don't want these stable pipelines that have been built by, you know, pipeline companies, XL or whoever, Trans Mountain, whatever it is. We want to fill these rail cars and roll these rail cars to the coast. I would much rather have a pipeline, because you can't have neither. We can't just kill.
I would argue we can.
We can't, though. Look at
Let me get in there.
Because you can say that green energy is the way of the future, but that is patently not true. And the reason it's not true is, if you look at the energy generation worldwide, green energy is less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
We live in Canada. We live in a northern. Northern demographic.
Yeah.
Right. But the solar doesn't work here,
right.
because we have a very short day during 6 months of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough time to charge the batteries up. Even if we did, our energy needs way outpace what can be achieved with solar, battery, and wind. We need either nuclear or some other coal or whatever, what other way to generate power. And the way that we do that is gas, fracking in the United States. We don't frack in Canada at this point
in time.
Thank
goodness.
Yeah. And like natural gas and oil.
Yeah.
And so you cannot, on a wish and a prayer, kill an industry. Now, disruption happens.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And if disruption happens to the point where it can replace it, then I'm all for it. I have no wish to pollute or destroy the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was all in on climate change, and I paid very much attention to COP 21, 22. I could talk your ear off about all of the things that I know about climate change too.
Okay.
But one of the things that shook me out of being complacent with it is what happened at the end of 2015, I think it's COP21 in 2015, but I could be getting maybe
I think you're
maybe
right,
22.
Yeah,
no. When they said, this is it. This is the last time. We've got this year to save the planet. And what they did was not save the planet. What they did was double down on terrible language, non-binding language, et cetera. And I understand the whys and the hows and all that other stuff. But let me tell you this. If you were sitting, if you were sitting... I'm looking at the time to make sure that I'm not talking. No, I'm sorry that I talk a lot.
No.
If you were dying
and
you sat down in the doctor's office and he said, you've got 5 years to live or 6 months to live. And you say, doctor, what can I do? And he says, well, I guess you could stop eating so much and, you know, maybe take this medicine. But don't, do it if you want to. Are you going to take that doctor seriously? Like, are you going to be like... Or do you think either it's an absolute lost cause and they know it, right? The doctor's like, yeah, you could do that or not. It's whatever. Or do you think that maybe that the person would actually want to do it? So my conclusion, not conclusion, because we're all still living life, right?
yes.
So conclusion up till now, what I believe to be true up till now is there's no amount of taxes that's going to change what's happening outside, right? The weather, the climate, the changes that we're seeing, and there's no denying there are changes. Like, this is not like February. Well, no, I remember rain in February when I was young, but
it's been known to happen.
Yeah, I remember more snow too. But
the weather, if the weather feels like it's channel surfing, it's snowstorm, rainstorm, freezing rain,
but
9 degrees.
All of that. If somebody could tell me, listen, $100 each every single day, no problem, fix this right up. Nobody can give me that number. If they can tell me how many PPM, if we get there's a little PPM reader, like parts per million of CO2 you can read in a room. This room will have more CO2 than 400 parts per million, I'll guarantee. It's a little trace gas. The Earth has gone through times when there's no ice on the poles, and the Earth has gone through times when there's ice under 20 feet of ice where we're sitting right now. My point isn't that climate doesn't change or that any of those things. My point is, I am not a scientist. Mr. Bernie is not a scientist either. And I don't know how much money it's going to take for us to stop the climate changing. And so with that as the basis of the argument, I've watched the United States pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement and Mexico pull out of the climate agreement and them have a reduction in CO2 emissions. And I've watched British Columbia have a climate carbon tax since 2008, I think it came in. They agreed in 2007, 2008, it came into force, and it was in place up till, I believe, 2015. It might be in place right now. Oh, yeah, it's in place now, and the last 5 years have had increased emissions. So I look at that, and I say, okay, either the U.S. government is cheating. Not really. I don't think that. I think that probably when you get out of the way of a company and say, instead of taking a tax in order for us to give it to everybody to take buses or something to that effect, we're going to let you choose what's best for your company to do with your money. And if you choose to invest your company in more efficient equipment, then that's wonderful. And that benefits everybody. And you, company owner, have a vested interest in doing that because, number one, it's cheaper, more efficient, right? Efficiency is cheaper. And when you have that more efficiency, say it's a carbon-based emissions or whatever, the better technology is cleaner. And we see this because China has a lot of coal power plants and they have a lot of mess with regards to creating CO2 emissions. Whereas in North America, United States and Canada, there's much less emissions for creating the same product. So it's very interesting that it's this... We need a carbon tax in order to fight this. No, we need the government to get out of the way and allow businesses to invest in themselves.
Okay. Well, let me phrase it this way, because it goes back to what you were saying about concerns about more people immigrating here, because you laid out a rational argument, but what people hear is no immigrants. You lay out a rational argument for why we don't need a carbon.
But I was blaming I hear what you're saying, but I was being very careful to, to say that it's not the immigrants.
But I'm
the
saying
problem.
That's what people hear, and I think it's the same thing with the carbon tax, because I don't hear Andrew Scheer necessarily making that argument, or
because
Scott
Andrew,
Moe, or Doug Ford,
because
or
Andrew
Jason
Scheer,
Kenney.
Right, sure, but there is an ideology that goes along with talking about climate change these days. And I am railing against that. It is a ridiculous statement that a number, that there is a amount of money that can be paid to stop the Earth from changing or to make the Earth change in a way that's beneficial to humans or in a way that is that we want it to change. We don't have that technology. That's a ridiculous thing. And the fact that a lot of people believe that if we just paid a little bit of taxes, I mean, okay, here's the other aspect of things. The emissions created in Canada are 1% of the world. If we went down to zero, how would that impact the world, Canada? And it would destroy our economy to do it. Make no mistake, to go down to zero emissions in Canada, it would destroy the country economically, right? We would be in a very, very, very bad situation if we shut down our oil fields and had zero emissions as the number one goal, if we were really doing it and not pretending to do it like the governments have done in the last 30, right? Kyoto, right? So everybody said we're going to do it and nobody has actually done anything. So my point is, when you actually boil it all down, nobody's done anything anyway, but there's an ideology for talking about it. Nobody can make a rational argument for getting out of the way and letting the market actually fix it. And how does the market fix it? It allows businesses to invest in themselves to cheapen and make it more efficient their production, their whatever they're producing, whatever they're doing.
Let me... We've gotten far...
We have.
What I get stuck on is... And maybe this goes to the base ideology, is that you are basically saying that if we get out of the way of business, business will act in the best interest of all of us. And I think a lot of people hearing that is not their experience. And that goes to some of the things you've been talking about in terms of cheaper labor, stagnant wages. Business has shown again and again that...
That's not business's fault. That's the... Okay. If you have... lunch that costs $5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sweet, by the way.
Amazing. That used to happen. I remember my pizza in high school was $3.25 and it included a drink. $3, $3.25. So okay, your lunch
is quarters for the X-Men machine, too.
Yeah, so. Your lunch is $5. Your lunch is $5 and you make $12 an hour. Okay. Now the government says there's a carbon tax and you have to increase the minimum wage. Okay? How much is your lunch? Is it still $5? No. And the reason isn't because I am blaming the government because now the carbon tax is in and the goods cost more to move, right? So the ham that was coming from Maple Leaf or wherever the ham was created, doesn't matter, is put on a truck and now the truck costs more. But the truck doesn't just cost more, the driver of the truck costs more. Right. So now the production of the ham costs more too, but that's aside because the electricity in the plant costs more because of the carbon tax. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the plant is paying more to the trucking and to the electricity company. Mm-hmm. The trucking company is paying more to the driver and more to maintain the truck because everything costs more. Now get to Walmart, right? Walmart pays the hourly staff more, pays the electricity bill more because of the carbon tax and because of the increased wages. So now your ham that used to cost $3.99 costs $5.99, or your butter that used to cost $2.99 costs $6 now. So that is how the carbon tax and these policies that are meant to improve everybody end up taking your lunch from costing $5 to $7 while you think you're ahead making making $15 an hour, $14 an hour. Instead, that $2 an hour, $1.02 of it goes to, 96 cents of it goes to the government. So they gave themselves a raise. Mm-hmm. We need a couple more bucks. What are we going to do? Let's give these guys another $2 an hour and we take half of it. This is insidious and it keeps us poor. It doesn't let people invest in themselves. Mm-hmm. It doesn't let businesses invest in themselves. It makes them hand over the money to a centralized core, I don't know, bureaucracy that is then supposed to make everything better. But here's the other thing. How many... Like you can't force people to do things that they don't want to do. And if you have the choice between a bus or a car, most people are going to take the car because it's easier, it's more efficient, it's cheaper, you've paid for it, it's in the driveway, it's right there, why not take the car? So when this centralized bureaucracy is then handing out money, they're trying to make these other things more attractive in order to reduce the amount of cars on the road. But this is... Again, another false dichotomy, right? Like they're saying that this is what happens, but it's provably false. That's not true. The buses are empty and the cars are full. The streets are packed. People are losing their mind. And the plan is we're going to throw money at buses. It doesn't make sense because we have to live here. We don't live in a fantasy world. We live in the real world, and the real world is overcrowded. And the fact is that their plan doesn't take that into account, because in their fantasy world, people are going to bike and take the bus. And the fact is, look around, they don't.
I think you missed a step, though, because, yes, the lunch used to cost $5, but then the lunch cost $6, and then the lunch cost $7, and then you weren't getting a raise, and you weren't... And, it, you know,
Things went up.
Things were going up.
Sure.
Wages were stagnating. CEOs were getting richer. People who run the companies are getting richer. And then the government steps in and says, well, you know, the minimum wage doesn't make sense anymore because you need... People are making $11 an hour, and what they need is $15 an hour. It's just, there's something out of whack here is what I'm saying.
Sure.
It's just that one side is racing to try and play catch up, and we have another side that's like, no, you don't get to catch up.
What happened with the gas prices? So I hear what you're saying, and you're saying that the cost of these goods was going up independently of the government's bad practices. And what I'm saying is... is bad practices not okay to use? Sorry, Ahmed Hassan. I find myself funny. The problem is there was an aspect of that, but the intervention on the side of the government doesn't fix that problem. You have to incentivize. Like you can't say to a business, we're not going to do anything, good luck, right? Like you can incentivize a business to do certain things with tax breaks, with all sorts of stuff. But what I'm saying is the direct injection of the carbon tax and specific policies have directly impacted pricing in a way that is in addition to the raise that's natural anyway, the inflationary yearly.
I'm just saying at the top of the cycle, though, you mentioned Walmart. The Waltons are some of the most richest people on the planet.
How many months could we run government if we took all of their money?
I'm not saying take all of their money. Yeah, I'm saying could they cut
missing,
the price
you're
of
missing
ham
the point. No, you're missing
or,
the point.
Or
no.
pay people a living wage no, no. and then live with $34 billion instead of $35 billion.
It's a false dichotomy. It's not...
I don't think it is.
It sure is. Yeah. Look at the... If you look at the... profit margins on a supermarket. It's razor thin. Like the operating costs
are
huge.
I work
huge.
In a supermarket.
Right. Yeah. So the profit margin is very, very small. And, you know, somewhere like, well, I don't want to say Walmart because they've more diversified than a grocery store. I've seen the stats for specifically a grocery store. But in profit margin talk, you're talking about a very small percentage, 1 or 2% within, and like, so that's $100,000 on a million, right? Mm-hmm. They're a very small percentage of the amount of money to keep a store like that going, a corporation like that going, is going to profits. Mm-hmm. Now, if you start reducing, like if you say, okay, well, we've got this balance sheet here of $34 million or whatever, that's our profit. If we can reduce the price of ham across the board, all the ham is going to go down by a dollar, right? Like everybody's going to love the ham reduction, and it still doesn't solve the fundamental problem. And the fundamental problem is a disconnect within the government policies and the outcomes on the ground, right? Because what's happening is the policies are driving the inflation. The policies are driving, and that was happening, yes, without them fixing the money, like the wages of the bottom. But you're not, the idea of a minimum wage is to provide, like, you can't hire a child for 10 cents on an hour to sew your wallets. That's illegal, right?
Yes.
And so the idea of the minimum wage was to give... like work is worth this much bottom, right? But you're not supposed to raise a family on minimum wage. You're supposed to.
But people are.
I understand that. That is not the people on minimum wage's fault. That is not the trap set by society's fault. That is the policies in action, right? Like that is where are the opportunities for these people to move forward? Saying we'll give them enough to live on this, doing just that, is very, it keeps people poor because it's less beneficial to take a pay cut for a long-term pay raise, right? Like if I stop going to school, I lose my, or if I stop working, I lose my $15 an hour. Mm-hmm. But after school, I'll be worth $40,000 a year, which is more than the $15 an hour. So it's a welfare trap, right? And it's an unfortunate one, but it's true. And it's the same one that's happening in provinces with the equalization payments. So, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to take a pay cut to develop your own resources to then over time it increases, like your revenues increase because you've developed this thing that continues, like we've got the mm-hmm. Ring of Fire in Northern Ontario.
Right.
Doug Ford has said he's going to develop it. And
well, everybody said they're going to.
Everybody, yes, you're definitely right. I don't want to ring Doug Ford's bell too much here, but yes, you're right. That was one of his campaign provinces.
To his credit, he's been in power 7 months, and you can't do everything in seven months. But it just that has been a long term promise. I guess in terms of practical terms, it's just. You talked about living in a fantasy land, and I hear you, but I also feel that some of this libertarian stuff is a fantasy land in that it expects companies and rich people and corporations to act with the fairness that you expect.
What happened?
And I think a lot of us from the progressive side are as deeply cynical of that as you are of government.
Fair. No, that's fair. So what happened with the gas prices? The gas prices, so Doug Ford came in, previous, for those listening who haven't been driving around for the last little while, previous to Doug Ford being elected, gas was up over $1.10, let's say. Is that fair? $1.10? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And after the Ford election, I was driving up here today and I was surprised it was under 90 cents. Under 90 cents. So when you say, where's the proof? I point to that and say policy drove that.
I would also say provincial policy drove some of that.
Sure.
Some of that is that winter blend is in the pumps right now, which is typically cheaper.
Than summer?
Than the summer
blend.
Yeah,
okay, yeah, sure. Yeah.
And I would further point out that there are a lot of conservative politicians dunking on this idea that it was only through their exceptional business skills that has cut the price, where it's like, yes, part of that is the cutting the carbon tax.
Well, Wynne's policies were just awful. Like the Liberal government in Ontario was exploiting the Ontario taxpayer in unbelievable way. Just the amount, the gas plant, the $1 billion gas plant cancellation from Dalton.
Everybody hates the gas plant.
Right, no, I know, but that's a really good example it's a really good example of money just blown on PR politics and getting a seat. It was $1 billion seat. The Liberal government was more invested in getting that seat than doing what was potentially good for Ontario.
Whenever somebody says gas plant to me, though, I always point out that all the parties promised to can those gas plants. No, so that the Liberals had the benefit of being in power at the time and were able to do it.
Sure.
And where they screwed up was that they lied about the cost.
Sure. But I mean, that's endemic, too.
I'm right there with you.
You know, I'm not... I'm frustrated and have been frustrated with the state of politics. And
I hear you.
I've looked at the LPC and I voted for them federally.
Mm-hmm.
Not provincially. Kathleen Wynne couldn't get... I can't believe she maintained her seat. But I voted for the 2015 Liberals. I voted because I believed Justin Trudeau's campaign promises. I voted for him because I thought that he would do what was right for Canada. Mm-hmm. And I was proven spectacularly wrong. And my dad told me that... He said, don't ever vote for Trudeau. Like, this person is not going to do good things for Canada. He had more colorful language. but so he said, and him and I got into an argument about it. And I was so wrong that, like, I can't believe how wrong I was. And what Trudeau has done since taking office has been so much worse than people told me it would happen, that would happen, that I can't believe they were right. And I'm sad that they were right because it's destroying our country, right? Like, it played out 25 years.
Well, I'm concerned that in 12 years, this planet won't be as livable as it once was.
Oh, the OCS, that person is nuts. That,
I would, my point there would be that they...
Have you seen any other things that she said?
Well, what I'm not questioning is the science, which in the report.
Oh, I've read the report.
But which is it's not one person's opinion, though.
No, but we can get into
it's a consensus. But
it's not a consensus. The
when 99 Barack Obama, and a half percent.
Barack Obama was the person who said that. Barack Obama was it was in a tweet, and Barack Obama was the one who said 99%. And we getting into climate change and anthropomorphic climate change is a little off topic, so I think we'll stay away from it. We can if you want to, okay.
I'm trying to get out of the weeds.
there are weeds, but it's, I think it's interesting. Like,
yeah.
I've looked at the LPC, I've looked at the Liberal government federally, mm-hmm. I've looked at the Conservative government federally, and I've been frustrated by both of them, right? Mm-hmm. But frustrated by their policies, frustrated by their lack of conviction. The Historica thing, I don't know if you watched the Historica controversy.
Maybe throw up in my mouth. Yes.
Yeah, so there are things happening.
Not because I disagree with conservative politics, just the pillaging of the brand.
Oh, and do you know?
You can mock Trudeau till you're blue in the face.
Who's on the board of? This was the Historica thing. The Alistair, I think his name is Alistair Smith. I think that's his name.
I think that's right.
His board of directors is governed by Charles Bronfman.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that this was not a political stunt, you're wrong. I would respectfully tell you that you were wrong, because this was nothing but politicking, right? Mm-hmm. The amount of spoofs and the amount of people using the Heritage Minute for Canada in ghastly ways, absolutely ghastly ways. Rick Mercer Report tried to use the same thing, used it successfully on his show, CBC, taxpayer funded, put it out, right? That's okay. And he said it was a 2006. It was a 2006 Rick Mercer Report, and he was telling his son that he had to put on his spacesuit because the conservatives made the planet too hot. And he said, and then the son goes, "I miss mom." And he said, me too, Billy. It's a shame she fell asleep on the beach." So he's attributing the death
right.
of his wife to the Conservative Party politics in 2006. And this is a heritage moment. Okay. This is playing politics and nothing but playing politics. And the thing that bothers me about this is that it's distractionary, right? It's not even real. Like the whole thing became, it didn't be, the conversation wasn't about the content of the ad. The content of the ad was that Justin Trudeau has failed miserably on all these fronts. 18 ethics violations, met 18 times with the ethics violation, 4 ethics violations. I think there was a 5th one as well. Bill Morneau's on the Paradise Papers. And 2 ethics violations for him. How about that? How about not burying the lead on that? No. Let's get into a conversation about the Historica Canada Heritage Minute. Come on, Charles Bronfman. I mean, Alistair Smith.
Okay. 2 things. One is Rick Mercer is a comedian and not running to be the prime minister of the country.
Sure.
But the second thing is that
it was still taxpayer supported, and it was still a Canadian. A big Canadian industry that is definitely connected to the government. CBC has a $1 billion a year government purse, plus $600 million from $10 million a month from the most recent, over 5 years, most recent Liberal payoff.
Pushing that aside.
No, but that's you can't push that aside. You can say on one side, this national broadcaster that has taxpayer support can totally use the heritage moment, but a conservative government can't. Can the Liberal government? Because they agree with you or no?
If they're doing it for a partisan attack.
Oh, so if you agree with it, they can use it. But if they do it as a partisan attack.
No, I'm not saying if they don't.
Do you think that what the conservatives put out was partisan?
Yes.
How?
Because it was a direct attack against...
Was it not factual?
It was factual,
so what made it partisan?
Because it was political. They were attacking their opponent.
So are they not allowed to use factual... Are they not allowed to use
they
factual...
Can do, they can... I'm saying... My personal taste was it was offensive. They can do whatever they want.
But that's different than the original. And again, I am trying to give you a bit of a hard time here.
It doesn't happen enough.
It's like eight heads of a hydra, right? If the first one isn't valid, well, it was offensive. And it was, oh, this and oh, that. The fundamental point is...
I'm saying my personal taste.
Sure. But
and I find this with a lot of... And I'll say this frankly about Mr. Bernier, too. That I find a lot of this meme warfare silly.
But that's happening with CPC as well, and they're using
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Everybody does it.
And I think
to
that's
an extent,
the game
Trudeau
these days.
Does it too with the socks and the, you know, the photo bombing and the selfies and all that. Everybody's guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I would make a point that serious issues should be tackled seriously.
Did you watch the whole Heritage Minute?
I did.
Yeah. I think it was serious. I don't think it was funny.
I think it was designed to be funny.
I think it was designed to be serious, in my opinion. But I'll have to rewatch it. I'll have to rewatch it.
Okay. All right. I want to talk about...
With the Heritage Minute Party.
The goal of this podcast was to talk about setting up an EDA. I do want to touch on that before I let you go.
Sure.
Because It's not easy to break in. You know, whether you're talking about national, whether you're talking about coming in locally, and you could find dozens of people in Guelph who've run with the non-traditional parties or have run as independent candidates. Can you talk about what is going on right now with setting up a new EDA and what your challenges are? Because, you know, I'll say, you seem like you have a pretty big crowd to draw from. You have that picture on your Twitter feed of the group. I assume that was a meeting of people involved in the local People's Party EDA.
Yeah, that was the first meetup we had. It was at the library. There were some people who couldn't find us due to the signage. I was like, it was on the second floor, and I guess I didn't have enough signs up.
Well, the children's library is up there, so unless you have kids.
You might not want to go up there. And, yeah, it's true. But we had a pretty good turnout. I was pretty impressed. We had a lot of people interested in joining the mailing list. And so, yeah, it's basically meeting people at this point in time, telling people that we're here and we believe in Mr. Bernier's platform and we'll be representing him in October of this year, which is very exciting. Next steps, we have the executive all sorted out and we'll be choosing a candidate before May.
Okay.
And if you're interested in that, there's a committee. Like, it's not just me who will be choosing the candidate. I'm the president of the EDA, but there's a group of people who will be choosing the candidate. Mm-hmm. And once the candidate is decided, then it'll be off to the races, and it'll be like a regular campaign. I would imagine the 50-day campaign time period and then 25 days pre-campaign time period, thanks to the new laws, Mr. Trudeau. There's a lot to know.
One more slam.
Well, there's so much to slam him on, isn't there? He's just awful.
What kind of person is do you, I mean, obviously, this is a very grassroots-driven party, but you are the president. You are working with people who are of like-minded. And
sure.
So what does the People's Party candidate look like, do you think?
Somebody who can speak honestly to what's happening in Ottawa, somebody who's got a local focus, but who's not afraid to put themselves out there for what Mr. Bernier is speaking about, freedom, respect, personal responsibility. There are missing in politics, in my opinion, recently. Mm-hmm. And I would personally like to see somebody who is very interested in the policy of things and how things get done, and somebody who wants to plan and have a plan for getting us back to the Canada that I remember, like the Canada where I can be a 20-year-old and yeah, it's hard, but I can buy a house, right? Mm-hmm. We've strayed a long way from that Canada. And if I was 20, I would want somebody who was working for that for me, right? And not a government handout. It's not about a government handout. It's not about a government saying, here's your house. Isn't it great? Because no, that's not the idea. The idea is being able to have the opportunity to do it yourself. Because because if it's hard, you're going to appreciate it. If it's handed to you, you're going to say, well, what else you got? Mm-hmm. Why don't I have 6 rooms? Why don't I have, right? There's something to be said for earning something and having a government and a person in government from our area who is fighting for opportunity, to give people the opportunity, not to say, here's that thing that you wanted, here's that whatever, but here's the chance for you to get it, and it's the best chance you're going to get, and we put it together so it's the best chance that you're going to get, but you have to fight for it, you have to choose it, and you have to take it and do the hard stuff to get it. It's not about giving people stuff, it's about empowering people to fight for their own, for what they're going to have, and forcing them to choose it, right? Forcing them to decide what they want, right? Mm-hmm. So, the perfect candidate that's hard to put down. But I will tell you that the large group that we had was comprised of people who voted for Justin Trudeau, who voted for NDP, who voted Green, and who voted CPC. It wasn't disaffected CPC voters saying, "Yeah, we hate Andrew Scheer. That guy's terrible." I don't hate Andrew Scheer. I think Andrew Scheer is trying to do by committee what needs to be done from the heart, and that's
interesting.
That's a hard thing to do. When you want to do so well and make everybody so happy, Like if you feel like you can craft the perfect centrist policies, which I think that's what Mr. Scheer is trying to do. I think he thinks that he can hold left and right together right in the center. And I don't think that's going to work. I think that Canadians go left or right and get sick of one or the other. I think we're sick of the left. And I think people are looking at Justin Trudeau and going, that's too much, man. That's too much, too fast, too much, done. And I think that people are going to choose or run to the right. And we've seen the pendulum swing. You know, we've seen the pendulum swing back and forth. And just, you know, from 1980 to now, you know, you can watch that tick and talk and tick and talk. So, yeah, it's... I think Canada is ready for a change. Mm-hmm. I think the change they got from Trudeau wasn't what they expected. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that Maxime Bernier is the one who will be in the Prime Minister's office and will have the most seats. And who knows if that's realistic? Like we're 9 months out. Mm-hmm. There's an EDA in every riding, which was unlikely for Maxime Bernier to get that done before the new year.
For sure.
And I know that EDAs are being registered with Elections Canada. My EDA will be registered with Elections Canada, so we'll be able to do fundraising and stuff soon. So there's a lot of stuff happening. And even with a situation where, I mean, conservatives don't have a candidate in every riding in this point in time. Liberals do because they're, well, not every riding, I would imagine, but maybe they do. But they have incumbents in the majority of ridings because they have the majority of the House.
Yeah.
So this election is very much wide open and nobody's paying attention at this point in time. Like the amount of people paying attention are you and me and like six people.
The hardcore.
Yes, people who really like it. So it's a very interesting, it's an interesting place to be watching it from. I like being involved in stuff like this. So I'm excited to see who we run and I'm excited to see the debates that happen. And I'm excited. I've been watching the PPC debates that have been happening from Burnaby and York Simcoe. There are conversations that are happening on local debate stages that I don't think would have happened without Bernier, right? Like where the PPC candidate comes on the stage and is a little bit more right, a little bit less encumbered by CPC policies. And I mean, that's a long in the tooth. That's an older party, right? You've got some things that you can't go against or whatever. So it's been interesting to watch. So, we're here and we're excited. And I'll plug this on the 21st, February 21st, we're having a meet and greet at McCabe's upstairs, 7 to 9. There's an Eventbrite. You need a ticket. It's free, but you need a ticket to come. There'll be a link. I'll send you the link and we can put it up on the thing. So there you go.
Well, and I'm going to say this sincerely. I appreciate you coming in. I think my political leadings are not hard to prognosticate. I project them every week on open sources. And I just want to say, because I had an exceptionally hard time trying to get the progressive conservative candidate to come on open sources last spring. I relish these conversations. The chance to go quote unquote mano a mano with someone who I don't necessarily agree with everything with. And I mean that sincerely. I'm really pleased with how this conversation went. And you know, I wish you and the People's Party EDA here good luck.
Thank you.
In finding a candidate and getting going. Every message should be heard. And I think you've clearly Mr. Bernier has struck a chord among some. And I was at one of the conservative leadership debates, and he has a fan base. I will say that about him.
He does. And I do appreciate your time and letting me talk. So I do get into the weeds a bit, so I apologize for that.
Well, nobody's perfect. And I think that's a great bipartisan note to end on.
Indeed.
So, Mark, for all of us, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And once again, that was Mark for all of us of the Guelph EDA of the People's Party of Canada. You can learn more about them at ppcguelph.ca, and you can find them on social media on Facebook at ppcguelph and at ppcguelph on Twitter as well. The federal election is on Monday, October 21st, so mark that in your calendar if you haven't already.
And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.